Blog Talk Radio.
Will you take me away?
sleep on it. Let me sleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning. Let me sleep on it. Baby, baby, let me sleep on it. Let me sleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning. Let me sleep on it. Baby, baby, let me sleep on it.
Gonna be boy, yes or no?
Let me sleep on it, baby, baby, let me sleep on it.
Well, let me sleep on it.
Welcome back, my friends, to Where the Music Never Ends. We're so glad for all your minds that we find, that we find. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Late Night Poets Rhythm and Rhyme Show. We are part of the world's largest community. That's allpoetry.com, and there you find us, the Late Night Poets. We put these radio shows on 7 nights a week, Monday through Sunday, 10 p.m. till midnight. Come hang with our wild dove, Luyu, in Nature and Passion on Mondays. Dig into the twisted thoughts of the Twisted Sisters on Twisted Tuesday. Turn up the heat with the Art of Seduction on Wednesday. Thursday's a split between Inner Craft of Fun Art with Rich and Neutron and Double Helix with Aphasian Index. Friday, come fill my eyes with open poetry. And every other Saturday, join Grey Eyes howling at the moon in the Canadian wilds as he brings you bad company. And if you're looking for a little more edgier, realm, then please check out our after midnight shows, 12:30 to 2:30 a.m. Monday through Saturday mornings. Join Victoria tonight as she brings you the hearts of LNP. Tuesday, take a walk on the wild side. Friday is a split between Crawling into the Dark Suit Pam and Break on Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbla as they teach you the fine arts of part sinner, part sin. Check out the contests and prompts for all of our shows, going to read your poems, and hang for the fun. Tonight, tribute to Meatloaf. How you doing, Pam?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just fine.
Awesome sauce. you know, a great idea for a contest and topic. I'm looking forward to tonight's poetry. That has to be, I think, one of my absolute favorite Meatloaf songs that you picked out for an intro song. So very cool choice there. And, you know, life is just all good. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about Meatloaf?
All right. Well, I've got to break it up into parts because there's he lived a lot of life in, well, a lot of many lives during his time. So I'll hit the first part of it. Born in Dallas, 1947, late September. His mother was active in the church. She was part of the Vodiodo Girls, a quartet of gospel singers. Dad was a cop. Came home after World War II with a mortar injury, so that plagued him most of his life. And he was a 9-pound bouncing baby boy at birth who they said came out bright red and stayed that way for a few days. So his father made note of comment, looks like 9 pounds of ground chuck, and then had the nurses couple of days later write up a little tag for his crib saying meat.
Oh, wow.
Always a big kid from the beginning, even in junior high, he was like 5'2", 240 pounds. And he had to
have
a number of things done. In 1963, he had a couple of really big events going on. He went to play poker with some buddies of his, some of which happened to be some wealthy kids. And the ante for the game was $100, and he didn't have $100. So his friends got together, said, I'll put you up. I'll give you $100 for it, but you got to do something for us. We want you to go outside, and we want to roll your VW one front wheel over your head. So he took up the challenge, had him roll one wheel of his VW over his head, got the $100 to play poker that night. And one of his friends, they all laughed and joked about it. He says, man, your brains must be Meatloaf. And then he also played on the high school football team. And it was attributed to him stepping on a coach one day, his foot, and the coach yelling back at him, get off of me, you hunk of Meatloaf. So the name stuck, but he was also called ML during his early in his life as a nickname. He went by Michael Lee Adey, but his birth name was Marvin Lee Adey, so ML stuck. And also again, 63, he went out to Love Field, met President Kennedy on the tarmac. And later that day, as the motorcade was running through Dallas, he heard about the shooting. Supposedly, nobody can verify this, but this is the story he tells, that Secret Service agent commandeered him, his buddies, and the car and made him drive to Parkland Hospital because he was needed there. So there is actually a picture of Meatloaf at Parkland Hospital, in front of the hospital, surrounded by Secret Service cops. And he said he got to see Jackie exit the car, her lap full of blood, and then the call, not 30 minutes later, but Kennedy was dead.
Oh, wow.
Then his mother died, I think it was early 1967. His father tried stabbing him with a butcher knife. He was just 19, and the money that his mother left him, got himself an apartment, kind of disappeared for 3.5 months. Until his friends dug him out. And he had also gotten draft notice, and he didn't want to go to NAM. So he packed on 68 pounds, was colorblind, and still managed to pass all the exams to enter into the military. So he split Texas at that point, moved out to California,
had to have been pretty strong to have had been colorblind, plus have that much extra weight and still manage to pass. That's some crazy facts there. That's awesome.
From there, everything kind of kicks off a little bit. He opened up in San Francisco with his first group, Meatloaf Soul. And every time they lost a guitarist, they changed the band name. They went through a number of names, like Popcorn Blizzard and Floating Circus. And they open up for acts as such as The Who, The Fugs, The Stooges, Grateful Dead, amongst others early on. But everybody treated him like, the industry treated him like he was a clown show. He wasn't thought of as somebody who would make it in the music industry. So after he did his stint on Hair in the late 60s, which was on the Smothers Brothers at one point, he moved to Michigan, Detroit, walked into Motown and stayed there for a year, where he met up with, he did a record, Stoney and Meatloaf. Sean was once more paired with his castmate from Hair, Sean Murphy. So that kind of, music producer had heard them because he was doing Hair in Detroit as well at that time. And he was playing the music scene in one of the clubs, opening up for all the big acts except for the Beatles, the Stones and such. But he was headlining everybody else that came into the arena back then. Had some trouble with the record company. One of the songs he really enjoyed that he recorded with her, they pulled out him and his voice and stuffed somebody else in it. So he moved out to New York, where he did another stage production of Hair once more. And he auditioned for another play that was just opening up. I can't remember. More Than You Deserve. This was early 73. And that's where he met Jim Steinman. And they kind of collaborated from then on forth. John Belushi took him under his wing as a understudy for the their National Lampoon Roadshow, The Lemmings. Jim Steinman went on the road with him as a piano player. He didn't get any accreditation for it, but it did help along the way, because a few years later in 78, he got a singing gig on Saturday Night Live after the album kind of came out, because it wasn't the Bat Out of Hell. Mm-hmm. It was so-so at first, but once he hit Saturday Night Live, things blew up. And what else? Nobody wanted to produce the album. After going back, I think three of the songs were also written during that time period on the road with Belushi and company. And Chevy Chase was along in that crowd as well.
Wow.
Bat Out of Hell, All Revved Up, were two of the songs. And the song we just listened to, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, was actually about an old girlfriend of Meats back in the day.
I kind of figured.
That they rigged it between when all the songs were written up, Todd Rundgren met with them and agreed to produce the album. And he worked some of his talented magic as a producer to put the music and the voices and everything together. And that song we just heard works out like a play in three parts. You got the opening end, you got the middle where everything's getting hot and heavy, then you got the back end where they end up hating each other. And what she hits in that at the end of that second part, stop right there, that was kind of funny, because when he got handsy with his girl Renee back in there, she'd always look at him, stop right there. So that kind of stuck with him.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that seems like something a 17-year-old boy would go through.
Oh, back then too, he opened for he did five of nine songs on Ted Nugent's Free For All album because the singer temporarily quit. So he's got accreditation on that album with Ted Nugent. Paul Schaefer was in New York as the musical director for that More Than You Deserve, so he knew what a Meatloaf's voice was all about. What else we got? The second album took, 18 years to 17 years to get back because Paul Simon had broken up in the interim. There were some issues, contracts with studios, and there were some lawsuits. 83, he went bankrupt or filed for bankruptcy, and he lost all control for his songs as part of that. And
that's
his way
bad.
Back again. 92, 93, him and Simon got together again for Bat Out of Hell 2, Return to Hell. And they came up with that second concept. And it's funny because all the record producers back in this said, an actor will never be a singer. And they told Simon, your music is too complicated. So they kind of stood the test of time.
Well, they showed them.
Yeah, those three albums, the Bat Out of Hell trilogy sold 65 million records.
Oh, yeah. I remember I was living in Austin, Texas with my mom and our roommates, and she already had, obviously, a Bat Out of Hell 1. And then as soon as we were able to, we went out and bought Bat Out of Hell 2. So we would always be rocking out to Meatloaf. He had a powerful voice.
Yes, and I think a good part of that was the fact that he had grown up in a house where gospel from his mother was, because he did attend Sunday school and the likes every week. So that was part of his background and upbringing, the fact that he was a large boy with a set of lungs in him. That probably attributed to is the fact that he was bright red for a few days after his birth. Yeah, I got taken all that oxygen. I'm ready. In 2005, the Bat Out of Hell 3 came out. And the unfortunate part of that was Steinman was sick at the time and really didn't have any input except for a couple of songs. So he didn't get to produce the album or set the arrangements or anything, which was sad. But he had triple bypass surgery, had problems with his heart. And even though there was a lot of suits rolling around back in the day, they stayed friends because it wasn't about them. He said it was about managers and lawyers suing each other for this, that, and the other thing. And funny thing is, he just died a couple of weeks back. It's less than a year since Jim died, so you've got to get that notation of the old mused married couple, which passed consecutively within a year of each other.
Oh yeah, I had noticed that. That was they must have spent so much time together. They figured they needed to be back together.
Jim always looked at Meatloaf as the muse to his creative genius, the way they way he put songs together, the thought that went in with it. Oh, in fact, the voice of the girl on that lead song we just hit with, that was Ellen Foley. She was part of that troupe of the Lemmings with John Belushi and company back in the day. And Todd Rundgren also did backup vocals on that song as well.
Oh, wow, that's really cool. Yeah, I noticed, I'd actually guess I'd never heard of J- Jim Steinman before. I mean, like I probably had, but just forgot that he was. But I had entered a contest today to where you had to pay tribute to Jim Steinman and you know, Meatloaf. So you had to write to a song written by Jim Steinman and you know, sung by Meatloaf. And yeah, it was really interesting how much they had actually done together, and you know, especially with the Bat Out of Hell albums. Yeah, lots of really cool facts there, Rex, for sure.
Oh, you remember Total Eclipse of the Heart?
Remember what?
Total Eclipse of the Heart?
Yeah, yeah.
I forget who did
that now. Jim Steinman wrote
that? Jim Steinman wrote that one. And that was supposed to go to Meatloaf for his 1983 album. But the producers said, no, we don't want any songs written by Steinman. So that one actually went to Bonnie Tyler. And another song he had written for Meatloaf actually went to Air Supply. Both of those songs were number one that year.
Yeah, it's crazy that they would turn away a good songwriter like that. But you know what? Sometimes that's just, you know, the way the ball rolls. And I know there was other familiar ones I saw written by that guy too, Jim.
Well, he did put out an album himself in I think, 81,
yep.
82.
Yep.
It was good, but wasn't received enthusiastically.
And that often happens.
And the one Meatloaf put out had some good music on it, too. But it wasn't what had already been previously come out. So everybody was expecting something different. And for years, they kind of looked at the two of them as maybe that Bat Out of Hell album was a one-hit wonder, so to speak. And where did they get that wrong? If they got number two out in 94, and then 11 years later, number three.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I think it was Nikki
Sixx. Did you know there was a Bat Out of Hell musical?
Nope.
Oh, yep, there was. There was. It was written and put... Meatloaf was in it, and it was written by Jim Steinman and based on the first album, the Bat Out of Hell one. Yeah.
Capitalize it since he was a stage presence anyway. He had a big booming voice. You could hear him hit those high notes, which is unusual, especially for somebody that large. He almost had a, what you call an operatic voice, so they played off the themology in the music with that voice.
Yeah, he did have a very, like you said, operatic voice. It also, you could see the within his singing voice, that he did grow up in a household where, you know, gospel was an influence, you know, based on the style of singing. And, you know, so that's really cool. And, yeah. Well.
Let's kick it.
All right. Sounds good to me. All right. We'll start out with Sinner Condemned to Hell by Rooster Cogburn. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
I just spent the last 20 minutes talking. Now you want me to talk some more.
Okay. Tell you what, I'll go ahead and give it a read.
No, I got it.
Oh, okay.
Sinner Condemned to Hell by Rooster Cogburn. Oh, I like that little motif up on the picture. Mother Clucker. Roosters, RCC. It was early morn, dawn sun, a demon in sky, the need, the greed, a farmyard thing. Barren too long, nothing round here grows. Gotta break away, free as bird on wing. Jumped on my Harley, revved up her motors, tailpipe smoking, out of here, gone. A few miles burning rubber, at the country store, had to seek her, risk Armageddon. Just a touch, a kiss, quell this consuming lust, distill the unforgiving minutes with 60 seconds worth of distance fun on fire, my perpendicular cheroot. Finally alone, no one knew just us two, kissing out back where customers park. Cockerels crowing, dogs howling, bringing it on, submissive, quarry of this lone shark. In throes of passion, hit hard with a bat from hell, joys of surreptitious shenanigans vaporized, watching, waiting, struck like a stinging scorpion, suspicious, venomous, my wife materialized, confused, dragged shamely back of car, wrecking ball, hit highway like a battering ram, driveway, home, condemned prison before hanging judge, and the last thing I see, she had a kitchen knife, my cheroot surgically removed my body, flying away like minced spam. End poem. What you
great
got?
Read there, Rex. Well, first of all, I really like where the cheroot was surgically removed from the body and flying away like minced spam. That was an awesome ending. You know, this had really great rhyme and flow. And I have to agree with you, that picture is awesome there. And, you know, let's see, great rhyme and flow. What I like about this is one of the first things that I notice about this is that, like, so much of Meatloaf's songs, it tells a story. And you know, and so I like that. I really like that second stanza. Jumped on my Harley, revved up her motors, tailpipe smoking, out of here, gone, a few miles, burning rubber at the country store, had to see her, risk Armageddon. You know, there are just some things that, you know, are worth risking Armageddon for. And let's see, in throes of passion, hit hard with a bat from hell, joys of serendipitous shenanigans vaporized, you know. I like how it has that dark, twisted humor, and then great alliteration with the use of the word serendipitous shenanigans, which is quite a mouthful to say. And then I like that he says, suspicious, venomous, my wife materialized. I thought that the whole, instead of just saying my wife was there or my wife showed up, I thought, you know, materialized was a great choice of a word because it kind of gives that idea that maybe she's got some witchy type powers that just helps her to poof, get out of, you know, show up out of thin air, and or he really wasn't paying attention, which was most likely that. So really just a wonderful story with that kind of, that like I said, great humor to it, great rhyme and flow, and very well done.
Should have left the bike at home and taken the car instead. Then she wouldn't have been there.
Exactly.
And as Rooster does, he's got to drop in the easy thing, the greed, a farmyard thing, and free as bird on wing. So gotta hit onto the rooster notion of clucking it up, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
He does that, catches a rye, because then he hits on fire, my perpendicular truth. Yeah, we know where you're going with this. It sounds just like it sounds
so
like another
there,
song,
Rex.
But hell, it walks easily into the song we just heard up top, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, except this one's kind of paradise in back of the bar, so to speak, where the customers park. Dogs howling. Well, that's kind of cockerels crowing, dogs howling, bringing it on. Yeah. Are you the dog there, Rooster? But I did like hit on a bat from hell. You got a double whammy with that. The bat out of hell.
Yes.
But also bat from hell kind of hits on the notion that, yeah, my wife's that bat from hell. And I like the Lorena Bobbitized motif to finish off. Yeah, there's no dematerializing that motif there, Rooster. That's nicely stripped in, as well as the mint spam. Boy, there's a cold offering on that table.
Youch. Oh, my gosh. Great observations there, Rex.
All right, where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have Bittersweet by K. Veronica P. And it goes like this. As bitter as the bitter is, such candy seems less sweet. I'm living life in late saccharine dreams, so write just tearful on my cheek. And let me wander behind the scenes, so sad how hearts do strut and fret, and take with them again regret. End poem.
Great read, man. And she took out on 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I told you everything I possibly can. There's nothing less inside of fear. And maybe you can cry all night, but that'll never change the way I feel. Yeah, that kind of bitter as the bitter is, such candy seems less sweet. But I kind of paint the notion of all that can go wrong will go wrong. It drops in the saccharine, the dreams, the sweetness on that one too. And the tear on the cheek. That wander behind the scenes kind of hits on the notion of limbo, the sadness of being left out in left field, so to speak. And that last two lines, and she did roll on with a nice iambic meter as well, which was wonderfully touched. But this also has a little bit of extra. Also hits on the notion of skating away. By Jethro Tull, which is a nice touch. I like that. That's a great song. It's getting away on the thin ice, a new day. Nicely done, Veronica. Thank you. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. I thought it fit really well with the song 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad. And, well, you had some really great observations there with the whole idea of, you know, this drifting away, and it somehow when you were commenting, I can't remember if you said it or I was just thinking it, but it has that idea of like denial. The part at the beginning, as bitter as the bitter is, such candy seems less sweet, really reminds me of how you brush your teeth and you go to drink orange juice and it just tastes god awful. And, you know, so to me it works really well metaphorically in that whole idea that, you know, something such as love that was once beautiful and sweet, when it ends, it leaves that bitter taste in your mouth. And, you know, I just, I like how she says, so write just tearful on my cheek. It's that idea to me of that, you know, even if the tears end, you know, and they're no longer physically there, they're still kind of like imprinted in your soul, imprinted in your heart that this person made you cry. I think this is just definitely a beautiful brevity and very well done.
Well said. All right. What are we entering to?
Now we go into the realm of In My Rearview Mirror by Martha Gettle. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So let me mosey on over and find that. Push play.
In My Rearview Mirror by Martha Gettle. I'm leaving you walking out the door. It's plain to see you're not mine anymore. The love that once got me through my day, I have watched that love slip away. You don't kiss and hold me like you did, and there's so much for me you keep hid. My heart's been slowly breaking, you know. And I think the time has come for me to go. Now that I'm putting you in my rearview mirror, thoughts in my head are getting much clearer. The haze that I was living in is clearer now. I'm on the road again. When you get home, you'll find I'm gone. Though I doubt you'll miss me for long. You built a life that doesn't include me, and it's time for me to set myself free. Now that I'm putting you in my rearview mirror, thoughts in my head are getting much clearer. The haze that I was living in is clearer now. I'm on the road again. I'm done playing second fiddle to your new love. I'm heading out to find the things that I dream of. I'm leaving you. I'm not looking back. My future's waiting. I'm heading toward that.
Great read, Martha. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam.
Well, this is wonderful. As always, you know, it's just great to receive a SoundCloud from Martha with her down-to-earth word lyrics and voice. And, you know, I like how she, you know, touches on a common theme in Meatloaf's songs, which is, you know, love and heartbreak. You know, really a great chorus here. It flows nicely. I like, now that I'm putting you in my rear view mirror, thoughts in my head are getting much clearer. The haze I was living in is clear now. I'm on the road again. Also, I'm on the road again as a nice nod to that song, On the Road Again, which has nothing to do with Meatloaf, but that's all right. It's still a great song. But what I like is this is about someone who's taking back their life, but not just taking back their life, but taking back their clarity of mind. I also really like the end stanza with, I'm done playing second fiddle to your new love. I'm heading out to find the things that I dream of. And what I like is, and I realize most likely the new love is another person, but because she's just leaving, you know, I part of me thinks that maybe the new love isn't necessarily a person, or that it could be, like, I like the fact that it doesn't clearly say, so it can be read as perhaps the they've become so wrapped up in their job, so wrapped up in, you know, a hobby, or it could be another woman. You know, there's like multiple things that you know can that you have to play second fiddle to, and you know, so I really thought there was some, you know, wonderful lines in here, in the whole idea of just setting your own boundaries and saying, you know what, I'm going back on the road and I'm gonna live my life. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. This is different for Martha. Instead of bringing the sadness to her, she's actually bringing the sadness to someone else for a change. Ah, I'm going out the door. It's not you this time. It's me. My turn to kick boots and walk out that door myself instead of you doing it to me, which kind of rolls on a different theme from most of Martha's songs, which actually works well for this one because it's a more upbeat and conscious thought to one's own self-empowerment as opposed to being under someone else's thumb. Nicely done there, Martha.
I like that, Rex, where you said, you know, that idea of self-empowerment. Very cool there.
All right. What we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Hot Potatoes by Incubus 2. And I'm not sure if that's a parody or not. But either read it or sing it, Rex.
Hot Potatoes by Incubus 2. Whatever happened to my motorbike when you greased up and burned up the night? Screaming along at the speed of light, my hair whipped back and my buttocks clenched tight, eyes streaming as I squeezed the brakes hard. Nothing happening, Simon, you bastard. Sirens are wailing, people screaming, go slow. Exhaust ain't backfiring, but I'm ready to blow, not having a good time. Hot potatoes, a side of steak, I really wish I hadn't cleaned my plates. Hot potatoes and a bellyache, I really wish I hadn't cleaned my plates. Hot potatoes, a side of steak, I'll whip Simon's ass with this broken brake. My head swimming from the smell I just smelt, hand trying desperate to release my tight leather belt. That's more than a fart I think I just felt, and that's not sweat running down my leg. Diarrhea streaming like a bat out of hell, I think my ass just died, oh what a smell. Leather seat sleepy as it weave and turn, my poor ring now is starting to burn. I don't feel very good, really having a bad time. Hot potatoes, side of steak, I really wish I hadn't cleaned my plates. Hot potatoes and a bellyache, I really wish I hadn't cleaned my plates. Hot potatoes, a side of steak, I'll whip Simon's ass with his broken brake. And boom.
Great,
there you go,
Pam. That one was very clever. I liked it. Oh, my gosh. It was fun to listen to. You know, great take on the song Hot Patootie. Hot Potatoes.
It's a parody of Whatever Happened to Saturday Night.
Oh, okay. I was just putting Hot Potatoes together. Oh, I didn't notice that. Okay. Okay, cool. All right, well, you know, I guess my mind just said thought Hot Patootie after I sang Hot Potatoes, but yep, you're right about that. Well, I really liked how, you know, he has a line that mentions bat out of hell and diarrhea streaming like a bat out of hell. That was great humor. And also mentioned Steinman a couple of times. I'll whip Steinman's ass with this broken bike brake. You know, just wonderful twisted humor. Leather seat slippy as I weave and turn. My poor ring now in a starting to burn. I don't feel very good, really having a bad time. You know, I like how, and the other thing is what I like about this is because, if I remember right, now Meatloaf liked to ride motorcycles. So, you know, I thought, you know, plus he had characters that, you know, like Eddie from the Rocky Horror Picture Show came riding in on a motorcycle. And so I like that the whole theme of the right really connects with that side of Meatloaf and one of his well-known characters. So really just absolutely clever and fun and excellent write.
Thank you, Pam. I think the thought with the picture up top and the allusion to the motorbike was just that. This was cleverly phrased out. It's kind of like the being in a greasy spoon diner, and you're getting what you got in it is the steak and potatoes, extra greasy, so to speak. And the thought is the motorbike being his normal progression of bodily functioning properly, you know, where you chew up the food, your stomach does the rest by bleeding out of your system. Instead, it's rolling back the other way because it hits the lungs. When you greased it up and burned up the night, screaming along at the speed of light, my hair went back and my buttocks clenched tight. That's all an allusion to riding a motorcycle, but it's all an allusion to, oh, God, something's happening. Eyes streaming as I squeeze the brakes hard. That's him squeezing his cheeks tight together. No. And then the thought to Simon, you bastard. And then the exhaust backfiring, but I'm ready to blow, not having a good time. Yeah, there's a thought, yeah, something's happening, and it ain't going to be good. The chorus, I like that. A little bit of deadpan fun in that. And the second stanza, the second verse was just as funny as the first, except this one actually walks along that notion. If you're wearing a leather outfit, including pants, yeah, when everything starts to pop all at once. And, you know, it's not going to be a very good evening. Really having a bad time. Yes.
Oh, man.
I'm going to curse that bastard for having me eat this stuff in the first place.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Oh, man. Great comment there, Rex.
What we got?
All right. Up next, we have Meatloaf Scrambled by Diane D. And we have a SoundCloud for that. And let me go ahead and find that. All right, here we are. And do me a favor, Rex. As soon as the SoundCloud is done, go ahead and just go straight into commenting, and I'll be right back.
Meatloaf Scrambled by Diane D. Some hobbledehoy is looking for sex in the dark night. Come on, hold on tight. And I'm yours forever if you give me paradise by the dashboard light. Young love, fog crawling over the sand. I can't even tell the north from the south. You had me on Broadway, but then you took the words right out of my mouth. No is on my lips until a promise is given. Kick you to the curb, free you like a dog. Cliches of lust just won't do anymore. So he said, I'd do anything for love. I'm looking for a lover, not just any lover. He has to be a good lover, skinny and rad. But I want you and I need you. Come on, baby, 'cause two out of three ain't bad. Rock and roll sci-fi and a boy, Peter Pan. Come on, Diamond, Neverland was no thrill. About a boy who refused ever to grow up. But you sure rocked it with Bat Out of Hell. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Oh, I like this. Nice touch with the song files, and you even highlighted them so people will know which was which. But that opening line, I like that thought. Hobbled ahoy! Wow, what a noteworthy introduction. Some hobbled ahoy is looking for sex in the dark night. Come on, hold on tight, and I'm yours forever if you give me paradise by the dashboard light. Playing off that angle of not just the song itself, but rolling into that thought, young love, you took the words right out of my mouth. They're still playing on that note to promise, got that in there too, until a promise is given, and it kicks you to the curb free like a dove. I thought cliches of lust, which won't do anymore, but that thought, where you hit with the two out of three ain't bad, I'm looking for a lover, not just any lover. He has to be a good lover, skinny and rad. Then to, two out of three ain't bad. You get a little bit of it. It's not all three. Usually it doesn't work out that way. And then you finish out with Bat Out of Hell, which was a nice touch with the rock and roll sci-fi and a boy, Peter Pan. Nice touch with Spineman finishing out the back end of this. Thank you, Diane. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was really well done, the way she used the song titles and lines from the songs. And she did it in such a way that, because to me, when you're going to use lines or titles in a poem, it has to be done in such a way that it doesn't seem forced. And here, you know, her choices of where she places the lines and the words she chooses to rhyme them with works really well to make a very cohesive, very smooth write This is really enjoyable. I really like, I'm looking for a lover, not just any lover. He has to be a good lover, skinny and rad. Oh my gosh, rad takes me back to like the 80s, when you know that kind of language was used, like rad, and you know that was fun. Rock and roll, sci-fi, and a boy Peter Pan. Come on, Simon, Neverland was no thrill. About a boy who refused ever to grow up, but you sure rocked it with Bat Out of Hell. You know, and I like that. That was a really nice nod to what she saw as her favorite, album produced, the how Bat Out of Hell really did rock. I also really like the line, no is on my lips until a promise is given, kick you to the curb for you like a dove. Cliches of lust just don't do anymore. You know, the cliches of lust just won't do anymore. It is a really great line in how, you know, oftentimes when we're madly and passionately in love, we come up with some of the most cliche lines for songs, for poetry. You know, that's just a given for pretty much anyone, almost anyone. I mean, there are exceptions. And, you know, so I really just thought this was an amazing, amazing write and very well done.
Oh, sweet, sad. All right. Where are we going now?
All right. Let's see here. I guess we will go with here. So grab the next one, get it over to the board. All right. And up next we have I Am Yours by Mamya. And it goes like this. You vow, make an oath, promise me that for love aught will you do. Save for that one thing to break my heart and leave me for naught. Such promises, golden words that fall on unexpected ears and fertile heart. It makes me want to believe. Believe in you, believe in us, believe in a future where we may belong. I see it in your eyes twinkling like stars in the night. Still, my chest is heavy, carrying burdens from past heartaches and pains. As you try to ally the shadows which plague my core, I see the light shining bright, bathing you in a halo, and I succumb. I am yours. End poem.
Great read, Sam. Thank you. And Manuel went with, I would do anything for love. But it she said it so it kind of works out the same way as a three-part motif as the Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Got that opening angle of you, the vow and the promises. And then the middle section hits that the heaviness. Still my chest is heavy, carrying burdens of past heartaches and pains. And then you got the back end where it doesn't finish up as the paradise does as hating, but the thought is a different twist with I would do anything for love is offering up that the sweetness in seeing something a little bit more for what it is as opposed to that which you carry as baggage and that notate the fact that you still hold that, and then that the thought finishes out as I see the light shining bright, bathing you in a halo. And I said, come, I am yours. So it has a nice finishing note to it as opposed to something a little less poignant, so to speak, something hurtful, painful. What you got?
Yeah, I like the way... She has this with the short, impactful lines that really just grabs your attention. And I like the observation you made about how, like, the song Paradise and the Dashboard Light, it's in, a, like, a, a three-part story. I thought this was really strong and emotive in the idea one of the most difficult things is when you've been hurt so many times to believe that someone can be trusted, that they can, actually love you and be faithful to you. I thought those were beautiful ending lines when, with the realization, that the person can be trusted. And I thought the bathing, I see the light, shining light, bathing you in a halo, actually did work really well as a nod towards the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light, even though she did write to I Would Do Anything for Love. And I felt that the overall tone of this write fit really well with I Would Do Anything for Love, but I Won't Do That. And I think the thing I won't do is that at first was to her what she heard she was saying is I won't put down my guard. Such promises, golden words that fall on expectant ears and fertile heart, it makes me want to believe. I like that there's a within those lines that kind of that sense of hope. I thought this was definitely beautifully written and very well done.
Where are we going?
All right. And up next we have Desire by Gerald E. Green. And we have a recording for that. So, and here we go.
Desire. Written and read by Gerald Green. Desire is want that walks alone, a craving with a hidden passion, driving toward what greed demands. Its appetite derived from yesterday prepares devotion's path, making haste and giving birth to eagerness, ignoring calls for recompense, but moving forward, ever forward, never looking for a guiding hand. Desire makes no friends and has no enemies as it pushes through confusion's maze, making sense of broken signals, carving shapes to suit its taste for new unmeasured yearning. While some confuse desire for love and substitute with fascination's glow, its energy cannot sustain what love requires. And so I pack my worn-out bag, recognizing void for what it is, knowing how proclivity will wane when out of sight. End poem.
Great read, Gerald. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam.
Yeah, I always appreciate everyone who gives SoundClouds. And, this is just absolutely wonderful, and I like how he has a very just straightforward style that's very relatable and yet has a depth to it. What I like here is that he really talks about, he writes about the difference between love and desire and how they don't always come together. And he looks at some of the negative aspects of when desire is alone and not with love. Desire makes no friends and has no enemies as it pushes through confusion's maze, making sense of broken signals. I feel like the whole broken signals is that whole idea of when you feel like somebody's sending off a single, but and then it's all confusion, I really like, well, some confused desire for love and substitute with fascination glow, and he writes that 2 out of 3 ain't bad, which I think is a really great take on that prompt. But I also like how the mention of like the signals, the glow, they all work really well, for for like Paradise by the Dashboard Light. And so I pack my worn-out bag, recognizing void for what it is, knowing how proclivity will wane when out of sight. And I like that ending because the whole idea of out of sight, out of mind, and that whole ending there really speaks well on how when you realize that it's time to move on because there is no substance within the relationship because it is purely made of desire. So really just a strong write all the way through and very well done.
Nicely said. I don't think I can add much to that. But I did like opening up the title that walks right into the write itself. Desire is want that walks alone, a craving within a hidden passion, driving toward what greed demands. And then saw the haste and eagerness, moving forward, ever forward, never looking for a guiding hand, no friends, no enemies, just pushes through the confusions, maze. All desire unfolds, it doesn't matter what the bad desire is, but hitting it on the thought of 2 out of 3 ain't bad with that last line. So I pack my worn-out bag, recognizing void for what it is, knowing how proclivity will wane when out of sight, both a dual notion, not just yours in the moment, but also the opposite from the other side will also wane in that moment once out of sight. So it does hit on that notion. Anyway, if you're looking for 2 out of 3as a thought to play against, well, then you don't have a worry and don't walk out the door. But the other end is, say, 2 out of 3, just don't cut the mustard. Well, then it's bye-bye. I'm on the road. All right, back to you.
All right. I tell you, there's just something about Meatloaf songs that make people want to write about going on the road. And so
I'm on the road again. All right, there's another one. These boots were made for walking.
Oh, that's an awesome song. Yeah, except for now I'm imagining you dancing around like Nancy Sinatra.
Oh, God.
All right. All right. Up next we have Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Adrian 41062. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Paradise by the Dashboard Light, Adrian 41062. Down at the marina, looking over silvery hue, holding hands, singing songs. Not a movement in our field of view. Songs echoing under dashboard lights. Prettiest woman, greatest hairdo. We've been close but never crossed the line. We're alone in the warmth, sure, the time. Hot summer night, down to half-dress. Passion flowing the contours of your breast. I lose my mind into your wanton spirit, I fall. You're so hot, a human fireball. The moans and groans engraved in my brain. All night, you twine. Like an addict on cocaine. I'll never forget the first time in the Cortina. And poem. All right, Pam.
Great. All right. Well, first of all, great read there. I really liked how he captured the passion of the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Prettiest woman, greatest hairdo. I thought that the mention of the hairdo was clever just because, you know, that song really takes us back, you know, to the 70s when it was, popular to, I guess, to do the more natural hairdos. I lose my mind into your wanton spirit. I fall. You're so hot, a human fireball. The moans and groans engraved on my brain, all night entwined like an addict on cocaine. Those are, not only did those work, like those lines rhyme really nicely and have a great flow to them, but he really captures how the sense of lust is almost is like an addiction. And, you know, and I thought, so that was a really great choice to, you know, get that idea across of being physically addicted to somebody. And what I also really like about this is how between the first part and the second part, it keeps getting more and more intensified. Like in the first part, the first three lines, they're holding hands, they're singing songs, you know. It's all very nostalgic and almost innocent-like. And then it just slowly becomes this escalate of deep-rooted passion. And so just a wonderful write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I'll never forget the first time in the Cortina. Nice touch to finish. Cortina is a small car. But that must have some little bits of gymnastics rolling around in there. Pretty Swimming, Greatest Hairdo. Well, that kind of rocks back into the maybe a little beehive-ish style. Or, no, the big puff hair. Remember those days?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And it's all the marina had me thinking of sitting off the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away, because it has that same kind of thought with the looking over a silvery hue, holding hands, singing songs, and then the thought with the Cortina at the closing end, and just hit on that. I lose my mind into your wanton spirit. I fall. You're so hot, a human fireball. The moment that grows engraved in my brain, all night entwined like an addict on cocaine. That's it hits on that notion of the second part of that song itself, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. Nicely done there, Adrian. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was definitely some crazy hairdos back in the 80s, that's for sure. And up next, we have More Than You Deserve by Babbler. And it goes like this. Blood stained the petals red, soaking into the softness of the blossoms, perfume devoured by iron, and I offered my throat to the wolf. His jaw wrapped around my windpipe. I forgot how to scream, the taste of air only a memory, whispering to the days before we met, melting toes on the coals. I mistook for summer. Fires raged, and my wooden legs crumbled to ash, blown away by a California wind, remnants of a real girl, spread out on the sand. None of my tears were laughter, and every night turned to day, the marionette strings twist around your fingers, a guillotine for a dancer that had never learned to crawl, popping pills to erase the fingerprints prescribed by yet another wolf. I did everything for love, and I want my money back. And poem.
Okay. Nicely twisted, arrived at a dry humor to finish. But she opened up with that bloodstained petals, red, soaking as soft as a blossom, tuned up. And I offered my throat to the wolf. The hits on that, oh God, what's that song? Was that, you took the words right out of my mouth, the opening segment with the thought to the wolf itself? And would you offer your throat to the wolf? Yes, she says. I like that, because she continued that thought. His jaw wrapped around my windpipe, and what was that? Yeah, it was. You took the words right out of my mouth. Okay, cool. But she alludes to other things away as well. She got a I Want My Money Back. That's for another song. I Did Everything for Love, yes. But there's a cold and note to being used, so to speak. None of my tears will laugh when every night turned to day. The guillotine for a dancer that had never learned to crawl. Nice line that was. And the thought of popping pills to erase the fingerprints prescribed by yet another wolf. I did everything for love and I want my money back. There's a, kind of turn back the hands of time on that note. Wasn't worth it. Please give me back what I just lost. Pam, what you got?
I really liked this one. I thought it was, you know, like hard-hitting, emotive. I liked that, as you mentioned, she alludes, she gives reference to quite a few of his songs, and I suspect there's ones in here that I don't even know. I really liked how she has a line about being remnants of a real girl. That whole stanza there, the whole idea of you know, feeling like you're made out of wood, feeling like, you know, you're that how Pinocchio, like Pinocchio, but instead the reference to, like, you know, that the real part of you being lost. There's really a sense of somebody, and you know, and that song that you're talking about, You Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth, that was another one that did a really good job of telling a story. And I like how she takes and references that one, but you know, here the being offered your throat, offering your throat to the wolf, is offering that your throat to, you know, yourself, to somebody who has no intention to do anything but to use you. And I like how at the end it feels like how somebody starts out with, you know, being hurt for the first time, and then going into a lifestyle of prostitution. And like so oftentimes the Wed Babbler does, she has this kind of humor in her writes that are like wry and twisted. And especially in that end line, I did everything for love and I want my money back. You know, and so I thought that was really great. And so, yeah, just a really profound write on the whole idea of feeling used, a guillotine for a dancer that had never learned to crawl. You know, it's a whole idea of somebody who becomes damaged even before they even fully learn how to love others and even to love themselves. So a strong write and very well done.
Where are we going next?
All right. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Catch us something by their toe. All right. Here we go. We'll go with this one. All right. All right. Up next, we have Heaven's Gate by Arcana. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Heaven's Gate by Arcana. I drift throughout the skies up yonder, upon a cloud and wisps and ponder, how to find heaven's pearly gate. So I know the way and won't be late. The majestic heavens beckon me nigh, wandering my path throughout the sky. The birds fly past to ask me why. I answer them with a longing sigh. I wish to know how the gate will open. I try the words that are softly spoken, but the gate stands firm in silent denial, demanding my patience to wait a while. The gardens inside are reputed for beauty. I try to avoid angels on sentry duty, to glimpse the wonders of heaven's realm and feel divine presence behind the helm, to feel such love and joyful bliss, to feel the caress of a heavenly kiss. Try as I may, I can't find a way past a gate designed for eternity to last. I begged and pleaded on bended knee to allow me through so I can see the sights and wonders so carefully hidden upon those wispy clouds there hidden. I'm not just ready, it seems, to meet the Almighty whose light is beamed. I must patiently remain upon my cloud and wait invitations till called aloud. The gate shines brilliant, pillars of light. If I stay too long, they blind my sight. I know God cares and will not forsake me, a humble soul whose heart awaits me. I wait to be plucked forth from a dream, a release from realities on which I lean. I pray for lenience in deciding my fate.
to be granted a tour past heaven's gates. End poem. What you get?
Great read there, Rex. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful write. It was put in a contest where the prompt was the song Heaven Can Wait by Meatloaf. And he was nice enough to share it with us. And, you know, really great rhyme throughout. And I like how there's a real sense of spirituality within this rite, and a sense of hope. The gardens inside are reputed for beauty. I try to avoid angels on sentry duty to glimpse the wonders of heaven's realm and feel divine presence behind the helm. To feel such love and joyful bliss, to feel the caress of a heavenly kiss. You know, there's this whole idea of, to me, of someone who knows that there's something waiting beyond this life, that is beautiful, that is worth seeing. And I really like also the ending, I wait to be plucked forth from a dream and released from realities on which I lean. It's that whole, to me, I like how that brings the thought that there are those things of this earth that we still need to tend to. And those people and that, then, you know, things in our life that we still need to be there for, and they lean on us and we lean on them. And it's that whole idea that as much of a beautiful reward that there may be out there after this life, there's still things that we have to tend to in this one. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Dan. Great flow and rhythm with this piece, Organa. Thank you very much. I like that second stanza just for the purity of the single-edge rhyme scheme. The majestic heavens beckon me nigh, wandering my path throughout the sky. The birds fly past to ask me why. I answer them with a longing sigh. And everything else hits on that notion of wanting, needing, the begging and the pleading offers up. But it's not about begging and pleading. It's about accessing that which one is bound to go through. And it doesn't come because, you think you've done the right thing because you've paid this or that, or you've given alms or whatever. It's all about when that time is right. And it doesn't come whether you beg or plead. It comes with humility. And to walk that path, one must walk it righteously, so to speak. Don't have to be perfect doing it, but walking over the edge one way or the other doesn't help. So the idea is to walk a level path yourself, be true with that path. And you might have to wait a bit, but that sort of waiting isn't because, as you said, isn't because you have to wait to get in it. It's that thought you haven't been called home for that reality just yet. So the idea of wanting to take that tour is, hey, nobody gets to take that tour until that time is ripe.
I like that. Right. Well said there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have One Heart by Michael McDermott. And it goes like this. The light is fading, voices tripping on tears. Now I am slipping, thankful for my years. And our shared love still beats in one heart, always will. End poem.
Great read, Pam. One heart can signify the thought of two, and that the light is fading, voices tripping on tears. There's a notice of understanding that which is near is coming, and offering up, thankful for the years, and our shared love still beats, and one heart always will. That notion, even though you're gone, you shall always be remembered, no matter what.
I like that. Well, first of all, I mean, to be able to write a mega brevity of only 27 words and have it be, you know, this strong and this impactful, and you know, I think is really awesome. And I do like how this poem is a really strong brevity, and it's filled with heart and an appreciation for life's gifts. But it is also to me, as you were mentioning, works really well as a nod for that sense of loss that you feel when somebody leaves, when somebody dies, and how you're just kind of, you know, and you're thankful that you know, in this case, Meatloaf and his music was a part of their life. So really just a wonderful brevity and very well done.
All right, where do we go next?
All right. Up next we have Meatloaf by Little 20. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Meatloaf by Little 20. Never met the stereotypical rock star. He was his own person. Never want to be a rock star. If I could be half as confident, I'd not be lamenting my past mistakes so much. He didn't even know he could sing. He was fantastic on stage. His spark for life captured the sight of the audience. Finally, adieu to Meatloaf. We and I love you. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful tribute done by Little 20 to Meatloaf. And the fact that she said so much about him in just, you know, like a few lines. You know, never met the stereotypical rock star. He was his own person. I like that she pays tribute to the fact that he wasn't a stereotypical rock star, that he was his own person. And if I could be half as confident, I'd not be lamenting my past. You know, I think that oftentimes those of us who look at someone we idolize, and especially like someone famous we idolize for their confidence, we think, you know, if only that could be me. So that's a very relatable line. And this, you know, really difficult to separate any lines here because it's so great all the way through, but also really like that ending. Finally, adieu to Meatloaf. Great choice of saying adieu instead of goodbye. I think that added to the flair of the poem. We and I love you. And so I like that she puts we and I love you because to me she's speaking personally for herself, but she's also speaking on behalf of all his fans. And so I thought this was very well done.
Yep, I'll follow that same thought with that last line, too. There's something else in the middle. If I could be half as confident, I'd be not lamenting my past mistakes so much. Hey, there was a time when he wasn't confident because he was being put down so much. An actor can't be a singer. Jim's end of your music, it's too complex. And also, after he went bankrupt in 83, he didn't start getting his royalty checks from the lawsuits that finally came out. He didn't start getting his royalty checks off the first album until 94. So he had some dips and valleys that he had to roll through as well. And not an easy path to his success, but... And it took a long time. He was, when most rockers are hitting it out in their early 20s, he was 30 when Bat Out of Hell came out.
Yeah, that is very true, very true. And I like how you connected her line there with, you know, the stuff that Meatloaf went through and how he had his trials in getting to where he got to in life, in his career.
Oh, yeah, and he,
He once fell off a stage during a concert, broke his leg. He finished the rest of that tour in a wheelchair, but he continued.
Oh, wow. I never knew that. That's a cool fact to know.
All right, what we got next?
All right, up next we have Decisions, Rest in Peace, R.I.P., Long Live Meatloaf, by Jared A. Harris. And it goes like this. I once heard you never cared, even when it came to facts of life. My months disturbed few, whatever compared, being ends misfit, blame through acts, because advice. Did I ever know how tomorrow would cater the mind? Forgive by letter before crowds swallow the misunderstood behavior in kind. Mentor of fear, damned if it ain't the resolve of a lost nation, should we yell? Remember, because tears can assist with explained, evolved, love weighed across creations, neighborhood please sail. Did I break blood vessels and lose an artery with dinners of demented signs, hid my mistakes, should it devil's plan to excuse man partly, missed winters, was intended to be mine. Am I loose in views about a broken mind kept in captivity due to trying? Ma'am, defy reduced friend who lose without age of emotion, behind steps when prosperity grew through crying? Damn, a dollar bill, it ain't worth my a desert heart where afflictions refrain me. Demand, stray father, will profit, can't be hurt, why she first? A part of cares, decisions obtained through fees. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Morrissey hits on a nice, decisions, R.I.P., Long Live Meatloaf. And does hits on those notions how life can either uplift you or bury you if you let it. And the fact that even though he was kind of looked upon menially, even as a kid, he was the rich ones would bait him into something of a joke just to show him up, so to speak. That thought with the Volkswagen kind of comes to mind, even though they might have been, or he thought they might have been friends. Your friends offer up the store. Yeah, we'll give you $100 for the game, but you got to have the right front wheel of your VW around your head. Doesn't sound, that goes past the jovial boys will be boys motif, so to speak. And the misfit, he was always looked upon as a misfit even by his father and the music industry as a whole, but he proved them all wrong. And he went through, he had his issues. He had his pain. He had a heart problem too, White something syndrome, where he too much electrical connectivity running through his heart, which had him issues where he actually passed out during shows a couple of times later on in life. So rest in peace, baby love. All right, how about you?
Well, I always enjoy Jared's poetry. He has a unique style all his own, and really great hard-hitting lines, and they're thought-provoking. And I do like how you have brought up here, Rex, is that he pays tribute to the misfit that Meatloaf was, the struggles that he went through from youth into adulthood. And, damn a dollar bill, it ain't worth my desert heart, and that does touch on the whole idea of, if what you're doing is making you some big bucks, but it's affecting your health, is it really, really worth it? I also like Mentor of Fear, Damned If It Ain't the Resolve of a Lost Nation, Should We Yell? You know, how do we react in a time of grief when we lose somebody, you know, and who's music we admired, whose, you know, individuality we admired. And, you know, just a really thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
And that's Wolf's Parkinson White disease.
Yes.
Too much electrical signals running through the heart, which causes arrhythmia.
Oh, and that kind of makes sense that it has Parkinson's attached to it, since Parkinson's is also has to do with electrical signals getting mixed up.
That Parkinson's has to do with the brain deterioration. This one is strictly the heart itself.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was, that's crazy, all the stuff that he went through. But yeah, just a wonderful tribute piece done by done by Jared. So, very cool. All right. And up next we have The Birth of All by We Are All Gonzo. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. The Birth of All by We Are All Gonzo. From the dank, murky pit, a beauty had sprung. Shadows did worship and treasures were hung. Cast down from the heaven, his cry he clung. We gathered the willing and his slick silver tongue. Forged the parapet into a flaming blade. It followed the plans that he had laid. And when it seemed over, he let out a cry. Reached up the blade and slipped the throat of the sky. The dark matter spilled out like rivers of space. The void took shape and formed a new place. The blood-filled in battle formed a new paradise, a smile on his face, satisfaction in his eyes. The beauty settled down and made peace on the land, existence became branches for the life free of man. He created the joy, the pain, and the mirth, and he murdered the heaven to create the earth. Since that great time, the memory has been lost. He worshipped the old god, but it had a new cost. He should have listened to what the beauty had said. God is not listening.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. It's always good to see you write by We Are All Gonzo. You know, wonderful use of language from the start. From the dank, murky pit, a beauty had sprung, shadows did worship, and traitors were hung. Great rhyme and flow. So he gathered the willing with his slick silver tongue. You know, to me, that's how oftentimes people are very much talked. If you get the person who can say the right words, they're talked, you know, and it's almost like becoming hypnotized. I like how this has that kind of that darkness that is in so many of Meatloaf's songs. The beauty settled down and made peace on the land. His essence became branches for the life tree of man. Very spiritual feeling lines there. And, you know, the whole idea that I like that this is about creation, but it's not just about creation of earth, but the creation of, as he says, he created the joy, the pain, and the mirth. You know, it's not just the physical creation, but the emotional and mental creation. So really a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Thank you. I think the rhythm and flow of this was sparkling. It just kind of sung right off the lips and the tongue itself. And I like the language run through this. And it hits on that notion of be careful what you wish for. Not all things with their golden or darkness does walk. And you should be well aware that there should be balance between that darkness and light, lest you fall blindly to one side or the other and be swallowed whole. And kind of hits on that notion of we've given up
too much and retain very little of that which once was us.
Way to go.
Really well said there, Rex. And up next we have Heaven and Hell by Robert Polsky. And it goes like this. Trying to find the difference between heaven and hell finds a cozy spot between rock and the hard place. Wonder if the air breathed was meant for me. Unveil if I really exist without you. End poem.
Nice right there. I like that. Trying to find the difference between heaven and hell. Again, that thought, the spot between light and darkness, find a cozy spot between rock and hard place. That's usually where we end up when things get overheated. And you hit on that notion, if the air breathed is meant for me, unveil if I really exist without you. So that's a kind of notion of does one fully give up the thought of God itself? Kind of hits on that notion right there. The heaven and hell, you got to make a choice. Rock and hard place. Yeah. Being that kind of leads you to be sat on a rock, but the harder place is walking on the other side. And the sort of air breathe and if I really exist without you, and it's a notion of, like I just said that on the last one, have we given up too much and retain little of our originality, which is part of the condition itself, humanity.
Yeah, I really like that. That was you really dug into that one. I liked listening to your observations. And, yeah, I like the use of the word unveil if I really exist without you. And I like there's that duality of the meaning. Do I really, like you said, whole idea, you know, to me it can be that idea of, you know, if love has left you, if a person has left you, do you exist without them? Or if God doesn't exist, do I really exist? You know, it's got a very philosophical bent to it, you know, in my thoughts. And I also like to use the line between the rock and the hard place, you know, representing that decision that's not easy to make. And he actually put it pretty much like right in the middle of the poem, which I thought really worked well to, you know, offer up a physical reference and made the right stronger. And trying to find the difference between heaven and hell, like, you know, to me that's, again, a really powerful thought in the idea that, you know, if you care about somebody and they go to heaven and you go to hell or vice versa, you know, does it really matter in the end, you know, because you feel lost without them? You know, I just think this is a really great brevity that gives plenty of food for thought, and it's very well done.
What's your next?
Uh-oh. Oh, okay. I thought you had dropped there. I was a little bit worried there for a moment. But, all right. And let's see. I just read the last one. So.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. All right. Then up next we have If Only I Knew Rhyming by Doc Frank. And it goes like this. If only I knew how you felt, I would have said I felt that way too. If only I knew how you felt, I would have held you like I wanted to. If only I knew how you felt, I would have listened more and not been such a bore. If only I knew how you felt, I would have changed, told you so as I knelt. If I only knew how you felt, I would have asked you to asked to marry you, knowing you felt that way too. End poem.
Maybe again. Thank you very much. I mean, it's on that I like the picture. If only, what is that hit on the notion of if only you knew? Kind of walks on that sort of, why didn't you know? What were you doing that you didn't understand what was already there? I would have listened more. I've been such a bore. I would have changed, told you as I know. It kind of hits on that notion of if only I knew, then what were you missing in the interim that kept you from seeing that which you kind of hit on that thought in the last, I would have asked to marry you, knowing you felt that way too. What weren't you paying attention to? Where was your mind? Where was your heart? And where was your sight? I like the thought in that questioning. Nicely done, Frank. All right, Pam, what you got?
I just feel bad that I forgot in a split couple of seconds that I was supposed to have you read that thing.
Yeah, a little late now.
You could have spoken up because, wait, Pam, why the heck are you reading this? Oh, my gosh. No, I thought this was really wonderful. And to me, the duality of it is, you know, yeah, here they could have been paying better attention. You know, they could have maybe stopped talking so much about themselves. But at the same time, was this woman actually being straightforward about how she felt? You know, was she just giving little clues and hoping that he'd pick up on it? Because, you know, men are very rarely good about picking up clues. I mean, there are exceptions, but very rarely. And, you know, I like the repetitive line, if I only knew, you know. And you know, it's a whole poem of regrets, of, you know, looking back and saying, you know, having those regrets of if I had known, if I had thought about it, if I wasn't so wrapped up in myself, maybe, you know, just maybe I would have seen, you know, how you feel. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
What we got now?
All right. Up next we have Heaven Can Wait by Adrian 41062, and Rex, give that one a read for us, please.
Heaven Can Wait by Adrian 41062. Those screams inside, I just want to hide. Lethargy sets in, heart thumping so hard. Where angels fear to tread, I'd be better off dead in my cesspit of self-destruction. I ask, why am I alive? This life just drives me to, I don't want to live anymore. Why do people stand and stare? Am I a ghost stuck in this realm, knowing I'm already dead? Whirling round in my head, the winds of change taking me into a spiral, down, down, down. Stop looking at me. It's time to set myself free, free from this nightmare of emotion and pain. All I do is wake up with disdain. Once my eyes transfix over the precipice, in some darker space, I hear the voices saying, jump, no one will miss you. This depression, a black smog, blinding my thoughts, blinding my sight, creeping, stealthily taking every last atom. Then the chink of light breaks through the darkness, lifting, lightning, opening my airways, cradling my heart and soul. Someone smiles. They say, how are you? Another human voice. I have a choice. Death pursues, take hold and draws you deeper into darkest hue. I'm not ready for death's final blow. Heaven can wait. I'm not ready. Oh.
Great read there, Rex. I really thought this was just a strong and emotive write, and I like how he brings us into the mind of someone who's dealing with severe depression. And the question, going back and forth, the question of do I end my life now, and really a great write on a difficult subject of dealing with mental illness, dealing with depression, and dealing with the conflict in one's mind as, you know, do I want my life to be done now? You know, and I like, once my eye transfixed over the precipice into the darkest space, I hear the voices saying, jump, jump, no one will miss you. But I also really like the ending where all of a sudden they realize that they have a choice, that and that choice is that they, you know, they made that choice to, you know, let heaven wait, you know, let the afterlife wait, because right now they still belong here on earth, and they do not want to feel death's blow. You know, so just a strong write and very well done.
Actually said, this is a two-parter, a before and after, with a brief interlude to set the pace between the both ends. You got that. This depression, a black smog, blinding my thought, blinding my sight, creeping, stealthily taking every last atom. That's the center point, the interlude between the darkness above and that essence of light, which kind of cracks and then expands in the following eight lines, I guess, is. Then the chink of light breaks through the darkness, lifting lightning, opening my airways, creating my heart and soul. There's that notion, whether it's from having spent some time talking to someone, unloading that which they can help you move into the next stage of well-being, so to speak. That it kind of hits on that notion of a breakthrough moment, which gives someone smiles. They say, how are you? Another human voice, I have a choice. And still, you got that notion, death pursues, they pull and draws you deep into the darkest too. But then again, reality is always something with the light breaking through the darkness. So the reality is that the last two lines, I'm not ready for death's final blow. Heaven can wait. I'm not ready. So there's that acknowledgement of, yes, I do have some time that is worth living here and in the now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. All right. Well, our last poem for the night, I'm going to read my poem, and then I'll carry Kel's over for next week in case she's able to call in next week. And this is an eight-line poem inspired by the song In the kingdom of pigs, or in the town of pigs, the butcher is king. I'm kind of blanking out on what the but it's from the Bat Out of Hell musical. It's based
in the land of the butcher is king.
Yes, that's it. It's inspired by that song. So this is the docile flesh in the promised land, and it goes like this. Hallelujah, holy ones, the king is on his way through your promised land with blade in hand, always seeking the bleeding scapegoat of the day. Your docile flesh proudly wears the butcher's brand. Pursue the coin, sound the trumpets, ring the royal bells. The servants clean up the corpses in the telling shed. The king paid a pretty penny to keep his soul from hell. So you ignore the corrupt stench that rests upon his bed. End poem.
There you go. That was bleak and miserable. Oh, well. Yeah. The royalty always gets the ease of stuff. They go off with their heads, or, hey, the royal chair is now full. Come wipe my ass. And, yeah, well, you know what? You might pursue the coin of the realm, but doesn't mean you get it. It goes here, because I'm paying my way into heaven, and I'll be sending you to hell first.
Yep, exactly.
Ooh, sorry. And the corrupt stench that rests upon his bed is the actuality of fecality walking in those shoes who think they're much better than everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Yep, there are definitely those out there who don't think their shit stinks, that's for sure.
Of course it isn't. It's on the fingers of somebody else. And if
yep.
you wipe it too hard, easy with that burlap, boy. This is a royal arse.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Some of the things they used to wipe with, oh, my gosh. Like, was it back in ancient Roman times, the sponge on a stick that everybody used?
Yes. That's why it's called getting the shitty end of the stick. The last one you use it gets the well-worn one.
Well, great show tonight, Rex.
Yes. I did have, there was one or two little things. Oh, he was in, Meatloaf did appear in 50 films and TV shows, and he missed out early in his career on one. In 1973, he actually auditioned for the part of Billy Hibbert in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah.
He might have traversed a different path if he had actually gotten that part. That was 1973. And he said his famous, the best role he played was, Paulson, Bob Paulson on Fight Club. He enjoyed that role.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he was almost the voice for the Hunchback of Notre Dame, for Quasimodo
yes.
in Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame.
But they turned off. They didn't bother thinking about him. Maybe they should have, because he had the voice for it.
Oh, my gosh, right? He would have done awesome in that part. Yeah. Yep, that's for sure. And, 30 minutes from now, Hearts of L&P with Victoria Frost.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that.
In the game.
Hearts of L&P with Victoria. Stay tuned.
Yep.
By 10:30. All right, great show, Pam. Thank you very much. And, you have to use the extra two songs and the minutia that I gathered up for this one. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect night.
Well, it worked out pretty good. I think it worked out pretty good. So, all right. Well, I will see you at some point. So have a good night.
Good night.